Good morning. This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. Watching the documentary Motley's Law, you might think that attorney Kim Motley is some sort of superhero.
The Milwaukee-born former public defender went to Afghanistan on a rule of law program in 2008 set up by the federal government in order to train and mentor Afghan defense attorneys. A year later, she left the program to set up her own law practice in Kabul, becoming the first and only foreigner licensed to practice law there.
Over the last 8 years, Motley has grown that practice and formed what she calls a Justice League with her Afghani assistants and translators. She represents women and victims of domestic violence, all trapped in a justice system that hasn't completely caught up with the constitution the country enacted in 2004. And she does it with a measured, pragmatic approach.
She was in town for a screening of Motley's Law at the Milwaukee Film Festival, and she spoke with Lake Effect contributor Mayon Silver about her work in Kabul. The film about her opens as she returns to the city to find a grenade has been thrown through her office window, which she responds to in character.
Well, I mean, I generally do try to be pragmatic, and so I think it's just part of my personality.
It's just something you grew up with, like a part of your character?
I think so, yes. Try to be very practical and just try to not freak out when there's a situation. I'm very much a problem solver, and so that's sort of how I've been raised and how I've always been.
Yeah, you wanted to kind of find out the angle of how the grenade got thrown into your office, which is very interesting. So obviously there's a lot of violence and there were car bombings and shootings and that type of thing after the withdrawal of the U.S. troops in Afghanistan. What was it that compelled you to stay in Afghanistan despite that surrounding?
Well, I mean, definitely my concern for my clients and them being properly legally represented was a major part of my staying. You know, obviously the support of my family helped make that decision a little bit easier. But it was mostly because there's such a need for lawyers and even a greater need for good lawyers in Afghanistan that there are so many people that just need it. They just need rule of law. They just need legal representation. And they just were not getting it. And so that all those things combined is what sort of compelled me to stay.
So it's one thing, you know, kind of having that in your head, knowing that people need this representation, that in an ideal world, you know, these cases need to be heard. What was it that you personally felt that, you know, it allowed you to stick on and take on those tasks?
Well, I mean, I like to live my life in an ideal world, to be honest. And so, you know, I enjoy my job. I love my job. I love my clients. And so, I don't know. It just felt right. You know, I don't know how to really explain it other than it just felt right. And, you know, and also it's a business. This isn't a job for me. It's a business. It's a career. So it's not just, you know, if I left Afghanistan, it's not simply leaving that job that I had in Afghanistan. It's shutting down a business. It's shutting down a practice. It's shutting down, you know, and I hire, you know, several Afghans that work for me. So it's eliminating their jobs. So it's bigger than just my job of representing people. And also for what we stand for, which is what we stand for is rule of law. What we stand for is making sure people are legally represented. What we stand for is empowering people by the laws and trying to help people to know what their rights are and how they can use their rights to their benefit.
So, yeah, you've spoken in the past about how laws protect people, and that's the purpose of the law. What was it in your experiences as a public defender in Milwaukee that prepared you for what you faced in Afghanistan?
Well, I think definitely being a litigator in the public defender's office was a huge asset to my going to Afghanistan and, you know, ultimately practicing in Afghanistan. So that was really a huge asset. I think that the diversity of my clients, the different clients that you deal with as a public defender from different walks of life, dealing with people that are in very precarious situations, you really do need to be a good problem solver to be an effective public defender. I think that definitely was a huge asset. I was surrounded by very great lawyers at the public defender's office. Some of the best lawyers that I know work in the office. And so I sort of made them my informal mentors. And I think that was really, really helpful to my legal practice in Afghanistan and beyond. And, you know, the law practice is about people, understanding how to relate to people, and understanding how to mitigate a lot of different circumstances for people that are in very vulnerable situations. And I feel like the law, at least for me, is what empowers me. The law is what allows for me to fight for justice on behalf of my clients, which, like you said, the law is meant to protect. And I'm very much an advocate for that, is using the laws in a way that it protects people to their maximum capacity. So, you know, it's a lot of things that sort of help to piece this puzzle together that allowed for me to become a litigator in Afghanistan.
Well, and so you came there in 2008. In 2004, they had established and signed the Constitution. So they had established that men and women are equal citizens and have equal duties under the law,
right.
That for criminal defendants or people that have been accused of a crime, they have the right to be informed of the charges, have an advocate, and they have a presumption of innocence. What was it like to be in Afghanistan during this formative period of rights being established?
Well, it was a really interesting period. It was, you know, a lot of people when I went there in 2008 did not know, and a lot of people still don't know what a defense attorney is or what the job of defense attorney is. So it was a very interesting time to be there to see sort of the seeds being planted and giving people what their rights were. A lot of people generally wanted those rights but didn't quite understand how their rights applied to them. And so I have found Afghanistan to be a place where a lot of times unwritten illegal procedures often trumps written laws. So when I first went there, I did see a lot of people that went to court without a lawyer. I did see a lot of people being convicted in absentia, which basically means they weren't even brought to court and they were tried and convicted in court. But that has changed slightly, you know, where you do see now more people being represented by lawyers. You do see now not so many trials that are held in absentia. So it was a really interesting and historically significant time to be there to see how those laws and those constitutional rights were being implemented. But it definitely is still a work in progress.
The movie shows several of your cases going through this scenario of having clients who may have just been accused of things and then they never get to face their accuser. When you go back in front of, and you had some significant successes in this regard just by showing people kind of the written law that they may not even know about, I wanted to ask you about the act of researching and getting a hold of the law, of the Afghan law and the Sharia law that you also incorporated. Where did you start with that and how do you continue your practice in that regard?
Well, I mean, with the Sharia law, I read a lot of the Holy Quran, you know, and researched. I talked to religious leaders, and it was more listening to religious leaders and their thoughts about Islamic law, Sharia law, which is really, really important and very valuable for me. Trying to understand and read the Holy Quran was very valuable and important for me because it is the Islamic Republic of Afghanistan. So Islamic law is obviously very, very important in Afghanistan. And so it's that sort of part of the law, the Sharia law, Islamic law is something, including in the formal laws, is something I'm always learning. It's always something that I'm sort of thirsty for knowing. And there's a lot of really great things within Islamic law that I've been able to use to the benefit of my clients, both men as well as women. So, it's really, really interesting to go through that process.
And how did you incorporate that with the constitutional law and the newer laws?
Long story short, the Afghan Constitution allows for Sharia law to be considered. In fact, insists that where possible, Sharia law should be followed in addition to the other laws. That's the thing about laws. It's how you choose to use those laws. There's thousands of Afghan laws, but as a lawyer, it's my job to try to find the best laws that work to the benefit of my clients at that given situation.
So you're kind of constantly devouring the written legal scheme that they have there.
Correct. And it's difficult because a lot of laws are very old, and so it's very difficult to find them. But, you know, I'm constantly reading, researching, and trying to find new laws.
They all are in English, or do you use a translator to work with it?
I do use translators. A lot of the laws are in English, but not all of them are formally translated, which makes a big difference. Whether or not a law is formally translated or not, I have my translators go over the law with me. Because, as you know, with the law, every single word matters. And so I make sure to really go over the laws verbatim in terms of what do they say.
Wow. And so you really have to trust your translators a lot.
Right. I mean, you have to trust your translators. I have multiple translators. So, you know, one law will have gone through three people individually for me to get a really understanding and to make sure that it's as close to the context that it's supposed to be in.
Well, and so that sort of leads into the other avenue of practicing law, which is about relating to people. It's not just about what's written in the books. You have to, you know, relate to the authority. You have to relate to the translator, to the client.
Right.
And you have to know when to be stubborn, because you were definitely called stubborn in the movie. You have to know when to push back and let go. How did you develop those skills?
Well, I call it a Motley's Law way of practicing, which is actually something that I'm trademarking. And what Motley's Law way of practicing law is a very immersive practice of law that takes into consideration human behavior, but also cultural, environmental, and societal factors. So it's fighting the system from the inside out. A lot of what I do requires that I study and look at human behavior and how humans react to certain things. And so I think that's just something that I've learned by doing over the years in life, period, that is an asset with my practice. So, you know, for a lot of the battles I may have with people, it's not about winning the battle, it's about winning the war. So sometimes I'll give up things, sometimes I won't give up things, you know, but it's understanding, like you said, when to push, when not to push. But ultimately, you know, if I have a client that's locked up and I'm trying to get him or her out, it's no joke to me. So I do what needs to be done in order to make sure that that happens.
It's very clear in the movie, and I'm sure in life too, that you respect the Afghan people. You respect their culture. You respect their legal system. But at the same time, you're standing your own ground. There was a scene in the movie where you were being driven somewhere and you were like, excuse me, I just need to listen to my music. And you put on some Lil Wayne.
Right.
It was like 6 foot, 7 foot. And for listeners, that's kind of it's a good beat, but it's got some profane lyrics, you know. How did you use your difference in the Afghan society to make a change and to gain respect?
Well, I think that the fact that I am so exposed to a certain extent in Afghanistan helps with Afghans understanding that I'm not just here visiting. I'm here working like you're working, and I'm trying to get a result like you're trying to get a result. I think the fact that I do often a lot more listening than talking is very, very important. I'm not there to judge. I'm not there to change their legal system. What I'm there to do from a foundational level is to represent my clients in the best way possible. Now, if I can change some things that I don't agree with, then that's an added bonus. But I'm not there to really judge. I'm there to represent my clients. And that's my bottom line.
So let's talk about some of those clients in those situations. There are some really key moments in the movie. Are there ones that stand out for you? You know, we could talk about a Jirga with the Taj Mohammed situation.
So basically, the Jirga is part of Afghanistan's informal justice system. It's sort of similar to a mediation arbitration here in the U.S. So Taj Mohammed, who's an Afghan man, owed $2,500 to his neighbor. He didn't have the money, and so the two men agreed that they would sit and have a Jirga. And again, a Jirga is part of their informal justice system where it's like mediation. In order to have a Jirga, you bring in religious elders, you bring in village leaders to kind of sit down, listen to your both sides, and whatever decision they come up with, that's what the decision is. And so they had the Jirga. Taj Mohammed gave his case, which is basically acknowledging he owed the money, but saying he didn't have it. He couldn't pay it. And so the elders and the religious leaders decided that the best way to satisfy the debt is if Taj Mohammed gave his 6-year-old daughter to the neighbor's 21-year-old son to marry. And that's how the debt was supposed to be satisfied. And that was their decision. So I had several donors that came to me that said they wanted to pay the debt of $2,500. And I told them, I said, it's not that simple. You can't just throw money at this and think it will be fixed. What needs to happen is that there needs to be a second jirga, which is like an appellate mediation. And if we have a second jirga, they need to agree that the village elders are going to be present, the religious leaders are going to be present, obviously Taj Mohammed and his neighbor are going to be present, but they all also need to agree that I can preside over the jirga or be in charge of the jirga. And so they did agree that I could be in charge of the jirga. We had the second jirga, and in the second jirga, the debt was satisfied. The engagement was called off. The girl was able to go back home to Taj Mohammed, and the problem was essentially solved. And within that second jirga, I also added extra benefits that all the men agree that their daughters can choose who they want to marry when they become of age. And they agree that all their girls could go to school, which according to the Constitution, all people have the right to education.
That was a wonderful success for the girl and for the family. Mm-hmm. Overall, as a situation with regards to women and women's rights in Afghanistan, you know, because the Constitution does say that men and women are equal, but yet in some of your cases, there are women who are domestic violence victims or rape victims, and they're accused of adultery. Does that still happen in those cases?
I mean, it absolutely still happens. You know, Afghanistan is a place where, according to Oxfam, over 85% of the women are victims of domestic violence. So domestic violence is a huge issue in Afghanistan for women. It is no secret that women in Afghanistan are treated as third-class citizens. So unfortunately, a lot of the abuse definitely still happens. But every case that, you know, I'm able to be a part of and other lawyers are able to be a part of where we're trying to work towards protecting women's rights is even more important to have those cases, to have those victories, to set those precedents so that it can help another woman down the line.
Do you find advancements in that area?
I definitely have found advancements while I have been in Afghanistan. You know, I had a case where I was representing a woman that was charged with adultery and she was raped. And, you know, we got a presidential pardon, the first presidential pardon for a moral crimes case. Within that case, we were able to decriminalize running away as a crime. I had another case representing a victim of domestic violence, the first time a victim was being represented by a lawyer. So we've had some very significant victories that have been able to establish more positive precedents in protecting women's rights in Afghanistan.
And what does it make you feel like when you go into these courtrooms and these jirgas with power as a woman, knowing that the society around you, women are treated as second-class citizens?
I mean, as a lawyer and as a person, I feel a great responsibility to my clients, to the legal profession. So I feel very powerful when I go into these situations because I know I have the law on my side. And I know it's just a matter of me figuring out how to creatively articulate my stance to the judges that I'm in front of, which is extremely important in sort of arguing on behalf of my clients. So wherever I'm at, I always feel that I have a great responsibility personally and professionally to really elevate legal practice.
What are your plans for the future for your law practice?
Well, I mean, I want to, you know, I want to do more pro bono cases. You know, things are sort of coming to a head because I have a for-profit business. 70% of my cases are paid clients. 30% of my cases are pro bono clients. And so I fund myself completely. I have found that there have been a lot more pro bono clients that are coming out of the woodwork that has sort of put me in a position where I'm representing clients all over the world on almost every continent except for Antarctica. So I want to continue to do that. I want to continue to do the private, for-profit, and you know, the private sector, because I consider myself to be a global investor in human rights, and I want to create more global investors in human rights. I want to create more lawyers out there that are doing this, that are really fighting. I want to elevate the legal profession. I want to help to bring more honor back to the legal profession, because it is an honorable profession. But I think a lot of people have lost touch with what the legal profession is about. I want to make the law and educate as many people on this planet as to what their rights are in a substantive way. And that's, these are all things that, these aren't goals. These are things that are going to happen. And so that's sort of what I'm on right now, is building those foundations in order to make sure that those things happen in the time that I'd like for them to happen.
Kimberly Motley, I really appreciate the work that you're doing, and thanks for coming and talking about it.
Thank you for having me.
Attorney Kim Motley is the founder of Motley Legal Services in Kabul, Afghanistan, and was the subject of the documentary Motley's Law. She was in town for a screening of the film at the Milwaukee Film Festival, and she spoke with Lake Effect contributor Mayan Silver.